this episode, episode 4, I sit down and talk with Jimmy V and Travis Miller, marketing gurus, entrepreneurs, and authors of the new book, Gravitational Marketing.
Hi, this is David Bowman. I'm joined today by Travis Miller and Jimmy V, authors of the recently released book, Gravitational Marketing. Travis and Jimmy, thank you for speaking with me today.
We're glad to be with you, David.
I'm excited, David.
I wanted to start by talking a bit about your history. You guys have an interesting story, and I was wondering if you might start off the podcast by just telling everybody a bit about where you guys come from and how you sort of came to where you are now.
Sure. Well, this one time at band camp, literally, back in the mid-90s, Jimmy V and Travis Miller got positioned next to each other on a hot, sweltering August day in the Central Florida sunshine. And we quickly realized that we hated every minute of it out there. This was a college band, and we limped together through that misery and emerged on the other end, only to flunk out of calculus directly afterwards because of all the time we spent outside on the marching band. It was really a losing proposition, and we said, you know what? Well, now that we've flunked out of calculus, we have to find different degrees because we've got calculus 1, 2, 3 plus differential equations. There's no way we're making it through all of that, so we better find something that doesn't require calculus. And so we both said, hey, how about this advertising? That doesn't have any math, and that seems like it'll be fun and easy. And you know what? We were right. It was fun and easy, and the girls were cute, and they didn't actually teach anything about real advertising. So it was a tremendous opportunity to learn nothing.
Which we did, and we graduated. And, you know, my senior year, I got a job through an internship I was doing at a local radio station. I got a job at the direct response advertising agency. And started working there. And Travis, when he graduated, went over and started working for an advertising for a radio station, selling radio time. He was an intern at a station as well, radio station as well. So, and about a year after Travis was selling radio, he decided he didn't like that really all that much. Recruited him over to the dark side of the agency world, where we did some amazing things and we did them rapidly.
Yeah, so this is back in the late '90s, and we walked into this place, and we got stuck with a book of accounts that happened to be all car dealers who sold the worst-selling car in America.
Nice.
And, yeah, they said, hey, fellas, good luck with this one. Why don't you figure out a way to sell some of these cars? And so we stared at each other for a month. Then we stared at each other for a second month. And then we started saying, you know, the paycheck might dry up here if we don't figure out how to do something with these cars. So we started cooking up ideas and cooking up campaigns, and miraculously, I don't know whether it was divine intervention or luck or what, we stumbled onto an idea. We created an idea, and we started using it, and the results were incredible. I mean, the worst-selling car in America all of a sudden started becoming one of the best-selling cars in the markets we were working at. But literally overnight, we were taking people who were little, you know, business owners who were starving trying to sell these cars and turning them into millionaires in 60 to 90 days. It was amazing. And so we built on that, and we created a really long list of successes. And we, in total, spent together $96 million in marketing that was our clients' money. And they generated $12 billion in sales as a direct result of the marketing that we did, which is an incredible, almost unbelievable return on investment.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
But it was that equation, that transition, that return on investment that caused us to become very successful in what we did over the years. And so after several years doing that, we said, you know what? The guy who runs this place is kind of quirky. He's not even really that intelligent. We could probably do this ourselves. Why do we need to do this for other people? Because, well, you know, the dealers we were working with were getting rich, and the owner of the company we worked for was already rich, and we weren't getting rich. We said, let's jump ship and do this ourselves. And so we did. And it was 6 weeks before my wedding.
6 months.
Oh,
fine.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Wives looked at us like we were absolutely nuts. And if they were upset, you should have seen with their fathers. You know, here they were, you know, their little girls were both they didn't know each other, the fathers-in-law to be, but, you know, each independently, their little girl was engaged to be married to a successful guy, young guy with a great job, really making a name for himself in an industry. And then just before the wedding, we walk out. And, you know, we saved up some money in the bank from working there. We said, we want to start a business, but we don't want to throw everything we earned at this, because what if it doesn't work out? We could be broke. Plus, you know, we don't expect to be making a paycheck in the beginning, so we're going to have to live off of our savings. So we got to make some kind of investment in the business. How much should we do? And we said, well, how about we each put $100 in and start the business? And so we did. We each put $100 in the bank.
I wrote a check, and he wrote a check, and opened up an account.
The bank charged us each, or not each, but the bank charged us a $30 fee to have the account. And then we had to buy our speakerphone, because we didn't want to have to buy two phones. A speakerphone we could share.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we bought a speakerphone, and that was, I don't know, $60 or something. So we were on our way to losing money literally right out of the gate. And we were sitting there with the weddings coming up. Thankfully, the wedding was all paid for, and the honeymoon was paid for. 6 weeks to go before I got to get married, and I've got to figure something out fast, right? Now, we had learned a lot at the agency. We had created a lot of remarkable ideas, but what we hadn't yet figured out was how to do it with no money. Because what we were doing there actually required, you know, remember the $96 million?
Oh, yeah.
You actually had to spend money on marketing. So you're like, well, how do you do this with no money?
Or very little.
Yeah, with $100, you know? And that's what we started toying with. And within weeks, we had started to generate leads as a direct result of our efforts, which came from virtually no money. And those leads, you know, we were able to quickly convert those leads into sales and earn some money, which we were all of a sudden able to reinvest back into some additional marketing.
And, you know, the concept, what we did was we took the same strategies that we were using with high dollars at the agency, and we combined that with some grassroots level thinking and strategies and attraction techniques. And we created, you know, and basically we got those from the bookstore. We went to the bookstore, became our best friends. You know, sat in the bookstore, research, looking for, you know, the information, and found a lot of great information, but not all of it. We had to piece it all together and come up with some of the missing points and merge it with stuff that we had done at the agency, and we came up with gravitational marketing.
Excellent.
That's what we personally use to grow our business, and basically what the book is, gravitational marketing, it's the book that we wanted to read when we started our company that we were looking for in those bookstores. The book that startup businesses and young entrepreneurs and companies that need to attract customers on a shoestring budget would want and need to have to make their business successful. And so that's what we did. We put all those ideas down on paper, and that's the book.
I think that's one of the things, as I read the book, that was sort of appealing, is it was actually things you had done and came from your experiences. And you decided to write this book based on those experiences. And that in and of itself was something you suggest in the book. For those of us, for the people that buy gravitational marketing that are considering taking you up on that suggestion of writing their own book, talk about that process a little bit. How long did it take? How was the process? What surprised you? What was easier than what you thought, et cetera?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I'll tell you, before we wrote this book, which is published by John Wiley & Sons, who's the biggest business book publisher in the world, they published the Four Dummies series of books and whatnot. And so it was a prestigious publisher and a great opportunity. But before we did that, we had self-published a number of books ourselves and also for some clients. And we actually had come up with a way to write and self-publish a book within 7 days and then turn around and use that as a lead generator as a marketing tool. So that can be done in 7 days. But the actual process of publishing through the publisher took much longer. In fact, it was July of 2006 when the opportunity was first presented to us, and the book actually ended up on shelves in March of 2008. So what is that for? That's, what would that be?
19 months? I failed calculus, too.
I had a couple of calculus funkies. So 19, 20 months it took for us. So it's certainly a little over a year and a half it took from concept to on the shelves. And so the process, though, I'll tell you, the first 6 months, and this is a huge lesson, we spent the first, gosh, was it 6 months? No, it was the first, it was July to March, so whatever that is, 8 months. We spent the first 8 months wondering what we should do with the idea, whether we should do it, how we should do it, what we should do for the proposal, et cetera. And we accomplished nothing. And then we spent about half a day actually writing the proposal, literally. Because we thought we had to write the book first. Then we realized that we could just submit a 8-page proposal to the publisher. Well, they rejected that. So there are two lessons here. First of all, we sat on our butts and did nothing for 8 months and accomplished nothing in terms of the book. So that was a losing strategy. Then we did a proposal in half a day, and it got rejected. So now here's where most people say, see, I told you that way. It couldn't have been that simple. So a publisher.
We believe in the concept of failing fast.
Yeah. But not in this case. I mean, we waited around for 8 months.
Well, yeah, but we after we got started, we failed fast.
Yeah. So now we're faced with this rejection. Well, what do we do? Do we wait another 8 months or what? Well, so we called the publisher, and we said, what is it that you don't like about this? What's specific? And he said, the title doesn't make any sense. We originally wanted to title the book Gravitational Marketing, but that's the name of our company. We thought that they would find that too promotional. So we came up with some other title. And we said, oh, you don't like the title. Okay. Well, so we took the proposal, and we invested another 15 minutes, and we changed the title everywhere, and we changed a couple of references to the name of the book, and we resubmitted it. And it got approved that time. And so they sent that along with an offer letter, and then ultimately a contract, which we signed, and they paid us a sizable amount of money up front to write that book.
Hey.
Which was really cool, very interesting. And so they gave us 60 days to write the book from the date that we signed the contract. 60 days. It was June 1st, and we had to have it turned in. Maybe it was 90 days. It was due August 30th, so I guess it was 90 days. And although I think we spent the first 30 days saying, what are we going to do with this? What are we going to do about this book we got to write?
How much of a learning experience was that whole process? I mean, it sounds as if a lot of these ideas you guys had already sort of conceived, internalized, and had ready to go. But, you know, it's one of those things where, hey, when you've got to tell other people about it and present it in a logical fashion and form, you tend to uncover some deeper insights and learn some other things. And was that the case through this process as well?
Well, very much so. But, you know, the biggest impact that we had on the process was making the decision to only cover one topic, which is actually attracting customers.
Yep.
So the first idea was to talk about a lot of different things. And then we realized we only had 300 pages. Literally, they didn't want us to go over 300 pages. And so we said, you know, if we limit the focus of the book to this one topic, which is where most people are stuck at, well then, we can really have we can go deep on that one topic instead of just brushing the surface of a lot of topics, you know. And that helped us lay out the original architecture and a logical structure for the book. And then what we did is we were traveling at the time. During the time that we had to write this book, we actually had 8 different seminars and 2-day seminars in 8 different cities around the country. And so that was a sizable time commitment on our part, going out at the same time we were supposed to write this. And so what we did was, so while sitting in hotel rooms traveling to these cities, we would just hit the record button on our computer, and we would record, we would tell the stories, we would share the ideas, we would share the strategies. Then we had that all transcribed, and we hired someone to take the transcription and massage it into prose and into a book format.
Oh, that's a great approach.
Yeah, and that really helped streamline the process. The key, though, was to come up with the beginning, start with an outline. You know, we had, went through several drafts of how we wanted the information laid out and the sequence of the information. And once we had that, we were able to then, you know, record information, compile information from other places that we had written, and formalize that all into, you know, the book. And that really helped make that process doable. For us, because of our time commitments with other projects.
Yeah, but a very important point to make here is that the book is not perfect. There are errors in the book, and then, by the way, it's been edited by multiple editors through the publishers. Errors in the book, there's a misquote in the book, a Henry David Thoreau quote, is actually a Ralph Waldo Emerson quote. And
there's actually, in the...
luckily, I think both those guys are dead, so nobody will care.
Yeah, that's okay, right.
There's a section where we discuss the 7 B's in sensational, and someone
7 of them.
Someone pointed out to us that we were doing a podcast with recently, told us that there's only 6 of them in there. So
yeah.
There's an entire B missing from the from that section of the book.
Exactly. So the reason I point this out is to say, look, you know, in fact, someone just told me this earlier this morning. Don't let perfection stand in your way of progress. And most people who are thinking about writing a book will never do it because they'll never get to the point where they think it's perfect. And my point to you is it wasn't perfect. The proposal wasn't perfect. The book isn't perfect. Nothing is perfect. There is no such thing as perfect. And if we were striving for perfection, the book would not be on the shelves. It would not be in the hands of the people who have already used it. In fact, just an hour ago, we just heard from someone who told us that by reading the book, he was able to make a single change to a marketing campaign he was going to run that would result in a net savings to him of $6,000.
Oh, that's great. And that's, for a small business, that's a big number.
That's right. So that $6,000 would not have been saved by that gentleman if we had waited for perfection.
Well, let's...
It's the wise farmer who says that the fences don't have to be perfect. The cows just have to think they are.
That's great.
Yeah, I heard that today, and I thought that was poignant.
Let's talk about the book for a little bit, and actually the content of the book. Let's start, if you were using Twitter to describe the book, and you only had 140 characters, I won't hold you to the character count, but you had to use Twitter-type format to explain the concept of gravitational marketing, what would you say?
144 characters.
What would the elevator speech be?
How to become the recognized expert in your industry and double your client base in 12 months.
Beautiful. I think that would appeal to just about anybody. Okay, so you aren't using Twitter. Give me a more detailed explanation of the book and the concepts that you guys put forth in the book.
Well, you've heard of FedEx, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
As FedEx delivers.
They were kind enough to bring your book to me this morning.
Well, that's wonderful. As FedEx delivers packages, gravitational marketing delivers customers reliably and overnight. It's, as I said earlier, the most effective way to position yourself as an expert, to become a recognized authority in your industry, to double your client base in 12 months. And it uses a range of methods that can go from being free to being very expensive and everywhere in between that gives the tools to really any kind of business who is interested in attracting more customers tools to effectively perform that task.
There's two main aims, that the outcome that you're supposed to get when you read the book. And one is to learn how any small business can get customers to come to them instead of chasing them and get more customers who pay more, stay longer, and refer repeatedly. And at the same time, create a business and a life that's more enjoyable, simple, and prosperous. ESP.
ESP.
That's what our goal is for the book and generally what gravitational marketing is as a whole. It's obviously more than just a book. The book is 300 pages into the topic of attracting customers, the lead generation portion of the process. But it goes no much deeper than that. You've got it. Marketing happens on multiple levels, as you know, David. It's the communication that you put out into the marketplace to get people to pay attention and come to you, gravitate to you. It's the experience that they get once they do, come into your fold and begin to interact with your company. And it's also marketing happens at the core of the company, the belief system, the mission, the vision and values, how the employees see the company. And that all comes from the entrepreneur themselves and how they feel and act and interact with the company.
Yeah, you guys tell a great story or use a great analogy in the book about an apple and how the skin represents sort of the outward marketing. Would you mind kind of sharing that story real quick? I think that ties into where you're going.
You got a quarter of it done right there. The skin of the apple represents the outward marketing, and then the meat or the fruit of the apple represents the consumption of your product or service, the experience that the customer has. And then the core, the seeds of the apple, represent the, as Jim said, the mission, vision, values of the owner, of the staff, of the leaders of the company. And the idea is, if you're going to run a good company, if you're going to be sensational, as we say, you must be sensational on all three levels. People frequently view marketing as like this salve that you can rub onto the surface of a company, and it can turn things around, it can change things. I know, David, in your role, the marketing role you play for the company you're with, so frequently they may think of that, just some things we can do externally to attract more customers,
yeah.
Do more business.
And you can do that.
Yeah, you sure you can. But in reality, for it to really kick in a high gear and to be very effective, that marketing has to seep in past the skin, and so that it actually is congruent with what people heard on the outside or saw on the skin actually is experienced when they bite into the flesh of the fruit. And then also that there's an outward pressure from the inside of the company that matches the inward pressure from the outside of the company, that congruency through and through, so that what what were the beliefs, the values, the message, the uniqueness, the benefits, the story all goes together. We worked with a number of car dealers, as I said, and frequently we put together tremendous promotions that would occur, that would happen on the radio and television, and it would be perfectly orchestrated across multiple media and on the internet and the mailbox and cable networks and TV stations. And then what would happen is customers would come to the dealership and they would go to the first salesman they saw, and if there would be a flood of customers, they would say, "Oh, I heard, I'm here for the big sale. I'm here for the so-and-so sale that I heard about on the radio today." And the salesman would say, "Huh? What kind of car are you looking for? That's what you've got, cars here." The salesman knew nothing about it. So once they showed up, like what happened on the radio was just a radio commercial, and they didn't actually apply that to the inside. Or, we tell the story in the book about the client we were working with who had a radio campaign and advertised a specific promotion. And then we got a call over here from the radio station saying, we're getting calls from our listeners saying they're responding to the radio ad, and the person answering the phone has never heard of the offer they're making on the radio. That's great, you know?
The question is whether does the fruit rot from the inside out or the outside in?
Yeah.
And, you know, really it's both.
Yeah.
It can happen either way.
See, here's the thing, David. You were talking recently about the physics of marketing, right?
Yep.
And that resonates with us a lot because gravitational marketing, and in fact, you know, gravitational marketing has existed now for 5 some years. We knew about it before we actually started our company. We had sort of written a manifesto on it. And we struggled for a while. The engineer inside of each of us worked to give very technical scientific definitions to what gravitational marketing is. The idea that the larger the body of mass, the more gravitational pull it could exert on the objects around it. Of course, the laws of motion that say that an object in motion will remain in motion in the same direction at the same velocity unless acted upon by an outside force, or an object not in motion will not go into motion unless acted upon by an outside force, and things of this nature. And this is all very true. Typically, the bigger a company is, the bigger gravitational pull it has. The smaller a company is, the smaller gravitational pull it has. It's kind of like Procter & Gamble, who you mentioned earlier. Well, they have a huge, tremendous gravitational pull. Well, we frequently say defy gravity. And that's exactly what we're talking about here, is for a smaller company who, by traditional rules of physics, should exert a smaller gravitational pull or a smaller gravitational force on the objects around it. If you can defy those laws of physics and actually make them play into your favor and get a garner more than your fair share of gravitational pull, gravitational potential, gravitational force on the prospect customers around you by way of becoming an expert, by way of offering free information that helps ease the buying process or aids the decision-making process or creates a buying preference for your product or service. By doing these things, by
this happens to the emotional benefits that your product and service provides prospects by leveraging word of mouth and referral mechanisms and systems that help spread your message through a marketplace.
By staying in touch with people once you first begin a relationship or initiate contact with them or they with you. And these are simple things that any company can do, but most don't. Instead, they look at marketing as a very transactional effort. They run an ad, and maybe they make a sale. If they don't, too bad. If they do, fantastic.
Or they run an ad just to get their name out there.
Yeah, and expect no sales as a result, and only to be on the that
to
top
build
of
their
mind
brand
awareness or brand their, you know, build their brand.
Pull.
However, if you advertise instead to initiate relationships, you can get more results than what you paid for if instead of trying to sell your product, you offer something for free and people respond. You'll get 10 times the results on a free offer than you will for a paid offer, if not more.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that brings up the other side of Newton's law of gravity, which is proximity, which is actually relative to mass is more important, but typically is forgotten. While a giant brand certainly has mass, what a small business can offer is proximity. They can be in touch. They can know their customers. They can invest in really resonating, creating a message and using marketing tactics that are going to resonate on a ground level with their targeted customers. And I think your book is, I mean, illustrates those principles, just hammers it home. One of the things, I got the book this morning, read it cover to cover, was just delighted with it. And one of the things I really was impressed with was, A, you had the ability to sort of create a high-level concept with the sort of idea of gravitational marketing. But then beyond that, I mean, the thing is just full of actionable steps that if you buy this book, there are 30 or 40 things you can immediately do. You can set the book down and say, I'm going to do that, that, and that right away. Tactical, actionable steps that you can do that will have an immediate impact. And I mean, I'm going to use a bunch of the stuff in there tomorrow just to do things here at my job. But was this sort of part of the process in terms of putting the book together? Was, hey, we got to have a fair amount of concept, but we really want to give a lot of meat here?
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. You really you dissected this idea immediately here. There are two parts of the book. You know, one is what do we call it? The power of gravity or the anatomy of gravitational marketing? Can't remember what we call it. First part,
I think power. But
and then part two is I don't remember what it's called either. But it's the actual tactical stuff. You know, remember we wrote the book a long time ago now. But the first part of the book is the big idea. The second part of the book is the meat, the stuff that you can actually turn around and use. And we're very linear thinkers and try to organize things, although sometimes to our demise. We wanted to organize this in such a way that, okay, someone can get the concept and then say, wonderful, what can I do with this? And then give them, there are actually 36 specific marketing methods you can use in a gravitational style that come in part two. So, and we wanted to give both. We wanted to give both the strategy and the big idea and the tactical and the to-do.
Well, you know, we know who our audience is. The small business owner, the entrepreneur, the independent sales professional, people that are in the trenches, working day and day, trying to attract customers, trying to build their business, trying to go to the next level, trying to increase their profitability. Those people want action.
Absolutely.
They want to know, what can I do? You know, but oftentimes to their detriment, because they're too tactical without any strategic thinking or planning. So what we tried to do here was give them the strategic plan to follow, and then at the same time deliver what they want, which is the actionable tactical tactics that they can implement right away to see dramatic change in their business. So it really is a manual, you know, a how-to manual on attracting customers.
Well, what do you guys think the most common misconception people, or maybe people in this target market that you talk about, small business owners, entrepreneurs, what's the biggest misconception they have about marketing and how they should approach marketing relative to their business?
Well, number one, the big one, is that they believe that marketing is all about getting your name out there. If you start to tune into that channel and listen to that phrase being used, it's all about getting your name out there. You hear this all the time. Frankly, even my own family, who know that I can't stand that phrase, and I think it's a joke. I think it's detrimental to business. They can't. When people talk about marketing, they can't help but use that phrase. It's hardwired into us to believe that marketing is about getting your name out there, but it is not. See, you could plaster your name on the biggest building in town or on the biggest billboard at the busiest intersection in town, and it would make no difference. Unless you attach your name to some emotional, concrete benefits that people will get as a result of doing business with you, an enticing reason why they should get in touch with you and give you permission to stay in touch with them, unless you give them those sorts of things, and unless you then leverage that permission into an ongoing conversation dialogue that adds value to their lives on an ongoing basis, then it doesn't matter who you get your name out there in front of. That's not what matters. Advertising or marketing is about initiating that relationship. The advertising is about initiating the relationship. Marketing is about continuing, fostering, building upon that relationship. And you know what? People don't seem to understand that for some reason. It's not clear. And it's not what they teach in school.
You guys both hail from Orlando.
Yeah.
I believe so.
Yes, we do. I was saying yes, we do.
Oh, okay. And on the blog, you talked recently about studying marketing at Disney. You guys were there on a Wednesday afternoon. It was a great little video clip that you have there on the blog. Last year here in Ohio, the Dayton Chamber of Commerce hosted an all-day seminar that featured some folks from the Disney Institute. I was fortunate enough to attend that seminar and found it to be absolutely fascinating. If you could, for a second, talk about the magic that is Disney and a couple things businesses might learn from the folks down there in Mouseland.
Well, first of all, the folks at Disney understand that thing, what we're talking about, the apple.
Absolutely.
They got that licked, okay? They know that it's not just a fancy set of mouse ears that makes them successful. You know, when you start to watch what happens, if you come to Disney, you I understand, David, you've never been, right?
I have never been.
Okay.
I'm that guy.
Okay, you're that guy.
Believe it or not, there's a lot of you out there, David. When you go, and it's your first time, I don't know if they do this, how this works, but you get a first-time Disney pin. And when you go to the park, you'll see a lot of people running around with that first-time Disney pin on. So, yeah. And a lot of them are not, 5 years old.
Yeah. when you show up and you check into your hotel, well, first of all, something very brilliant that they do. We live here, so we never get the opportunity to experience this firsthand because we just drive down there. But the way most people experience Disney is they fly into the airport in Orlando, and Disney picks everybody up in a bus. The Disney bus, and brings down there. This is a yellow school bus. I mean, these are nice, big old coaches. And what's interesting is they it's a benefit. You don't have to rent a car when you come to Disney. They provide all your transportation to and from Disney, within the resorts, from the resorts to the parks, from one park to another park, to all the shopping, to all the dining, to everywhere you could possibly go. And it's brilliant. Now think about that. Great benefit for the visitors. But what else does it do? It locks people into the Disney property.
Yep.
You can't leave. If you didn't rent a car, you can't go to Universal unless you want to pay $60 cab ride, okay? Most people aren't going to do that, although I know some who do. And so Disney, right from the get-go, creates a controlled environment. And then when you get there and they drop you off at your hotel, it doesn't matter what hotel or what day you get there, there's likely to be a line. Now, one thing Disney is famous for are the lines. You have to wait in line everywhere you go in Disney. You want to get a bottle of water from a stand, you have to wait in line for it. Now, for me, this is I can't take it. I can't stand it. I hate waiting in line. But they understand that people are going to have a problem with waiting in line to some degree, so they begin to get you used to the idea right from the get-go. When you get to your hotel, every Disney hotel I've been to has a little rope line thing right in front of a little queue line in front of the check-in counter. And you're going to wait in line to check into your hotel, so that you understand from minute one that your vacation is about waiting in line. And see, because they're so popular, they can't do anything about this. They know that you're going to have to wait in line. That's a weakness. So they've done two things to deal with it. One is they get you used to it right from minute one so that you can begin dealing with these line issues in your mind before you even get to the park. And two, they created the fast pass system, which was an answer to the demand of their customers saying, we want fewer lines. So they said, guests, as they call them, who are willing to make an investment of energy and time to actually basically pre-reserve a space online, you can get a fast pass and can come back at a pre-specified time and not have to wait and nearly as long a line. And so you get to your hotel, you wait in line, you check in, and everything that happens, everything at Disney is a theme. This isn't like you check in and you're in a Motel 6. You check in the Disney. The Disney experience begins from the first moment you step on the bus, and it continues on into your hotel room, and of course it happens in the park. So it's a matter of the consumption, the entire consumption experience being congruent with what the message was, right now, which is a year of a million dreams that you see all over the TV, all over the country. The message is carried through all the way through the experience, and obviously it exists at the core, which started with Walt Disney himself, which is how the place ever became the magical place it was.
Well, then moving on from there, flipping through the book, one of the folks you mentioned as influential on your thinking is Malcolm Gladwell. He's somebody whose work I love as well. And in his book, The Tipping Point, which was written, I believe, mid-90s, certainly prior to sort of the explosion of Web 2.0 and the internet as the huge communication tool that it is now. But in the book, he talks about three types of people that really spread ideas: connectors, mavens, and salespeople. In his book, there were three distinct groups of people that had distinct attributes. It seems as if, though, in the era of blogs, social networks, and really endless channels of communication, that it may be feasible to be all three, and seems as if that might be an idea that you're sort of putting forth in gravitational marketing. How do you guys feel about that idea? Is that something that you guys believe to be true? And sort of how does that tie in with gravitational marketing?
Well, that's interesting. I know Travis is going to have some unique thoughts on this because he has a philosophy based on the Gladwell principles that he's even expanded out. But I want to touch on your concept of, you know, can everyone be all three? You know, people can be all three. I definitely believe that with social media and blogging and Twitter and Facebook and MySpace and all of the communication and you know, social aspects of the internet now, you can disseminate messages quicker and to more people using those tools. But I don't think it really, I think what Gladwell was talking about is really a personality trait, and people are ingrained with, you know, what they are, you know, whether they're a maven or a connector or a salesperson, just more so than their communication method, just their personality, them personally, they are those things. Now, that doesn't mean with gravitational marketing, one of the elements of being sensational is having spreadability or building spreadability mechanics into your business. And I believe that as a company and as a marketer, you can empower your customers to spread your message, but it requires not giving them just an opportunity to do it, which is what a lot of businesses do. They do a good job, so they give an opportunity for their customers to talk about them. Well, that's not enough. And since most people aren't connectors, mavens, or salespeople, they don't spread the message. What you have to do is give them more than just the opportunity. You have to give them the mechanics. You have to give them the reason why that they should spread your message, give them the impetus to spread it, and then give them the tools to spread your message the exact way you want it spread. And I believe that when you do that, you can increase your gravitational potential dramatically, because you basically have more bodies, to capitalize on the scientific analogy, more bodies out there orbiting your company and spreading that message. So you become more attractive that way.
Excellent.
Travis, do you want to expand on the types of people?
No, because we'd be here for a couple hours.
We'll save that for the next podcast. What advice could you guys give people about finding balance in life? I know that's part of the reason that you wrote the book. So certainly not the sole purpose, but a lot of what you talk about is finding balance in life. And are there tools you use, techniques you use to manage your time and your priorities? And I guess put more simply in David Allen terms, how do you guys get things done?
Well, I believe we are real big on creating work-life balance. And, you know, in our world, we call it ESP, enjoyable, simple, and prosperous. And the thing is, you know, most business owners, when they get into business, they get into it because they have a passion for the thing that they do. You know, they get into carpet cleaning business because they like cleaning carpets, or, you know, they like that industry. And what happens is that they build a business that becomes a job, because they build it around them doing things that they know how to do. And unfortunately, that doesn't lead to a business that provides a lifestyle. It leads to a lifestyle that gets dictated by the business.
Yeah, E-myth principle.
Yeah, classic E-myth.
Absolutely.
Stuff. Yeah, so what we have to do is we have to switch the mindset and say, you're not here to perform a function. You're here as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, to grow a company. And the key for that growth begins understanding the marketing process and understanding that your job and the most profitable job in your entire company is promoting your business. And when we can get business owners' mindset there and get them out of the doing of the company, then the work-life balance becomes tremendously more easily attainable, and their lives do really become enjoyable, simple, and prosperous when they can make that transition and they spend their time focusing on promoting what they love, promoting their baby, their business, and instead of toiling and, you know, just in the business, in the trenches, every single day dealing with every little minutia piece of reactive garbage that they have to deal with.
Well, you know, one of the big keys to getting things done, I believe, or frankly have found, is by setting out without trying to get too many things done. We limit ourselves usually to 2, 3, max 4 real big things that we want to get done every day. And also, you know, most people in life tend to organize their to-do list, so to say, and whether in their personal life or in their business life, by putting the small things, the little things first, because they're easier. So if you make I used to be guilty of this, absolutely. You make a to-do list, and you're like, okay, what do I do next? And you look down there, like, what can I knock out in a couple of minutes? What can I knock out in a couple of minutes? And because it feels good psychologically to check off those things. And so what happens is you'll finish the day, because once you do those handful of little things, and then you have your interruptions and whatnot throughout the day, you find yourself at the end of the day with none of the big stuff done. So you push that to the next day. So what we try to do is we write out the big things we want to accomplish, check the little things. Frankly, who cares if they get accomplished? I mean, we try to do them, but we let those fall more frequently than the big things. And then we attack the big things first, even though you have to train your mind to do this. When you attack the big things first, you find yourself at the end of the day, you finished one or two really big things. And at the end of the week, that's 5 to 10 really big things. And by the end of the month, that's 30 to, well, I'm losing my numbers here. That's some number.
Damn,
of,
calculus
really,
again.
Yeah, 20 to 40 really big things. You know what I mean?
And sometimes a really big thing is really a piece of a really big thing.
You know? No, absolutely.
A piece of a really big thing.
Yeah.
Which, you know, sometimes most business owners don't get one really big thing done in a year of their business.
Oh, I know a guy. I love him. Dear friend of mine. He's been successful in his career, and he's been asking us for years about specific things that we do with relation to the internet, and asking us how he wants to learn from us and mimic some of the things that we had done. And we would give him tasks like, okay, well, here's, you know, do this, this, and that first. And check back. 6 months later, we still haven't done any of them on the list. Like, well, you know, if it takes 6 months to do things that should take 6 minutes, then this is really going to be slow going. You know, but he's practicing a policy of avoidance. He's afraid of it, or he doesn't understand it, so he doesn't do it. Where the inverse should actually be true. You should take those things you are most afraid of and face them first.
It's the great book on that, The War of Art.
I've heard of that book. I haven't read it.
It's all about that premise and sort of putting the thing you're sort of afraid of right out there in front of you and just knocking it out. But no, that's a great strategy. Yeah. Finally, I guess we're past the 40-minute mark, but I wanted to see if there were some words of wisdom that anybody listening to this, you'd like to leave them with, and just some closing thoughts that you guys would have.
No sex in the champagne room. That's not applicable here. Hang on.
You guys have a champagne room?
No, not here. Not here. I had champagne once. Words of wisdom. You know, it really goes back to, I mean, if I could boil it down to a sentence, I would love to, but really the most important thing is to understand that your purpose in your business should be to get and keep customers, nothing else. Not to do a better job at what it is you do, because you do a fine job already. Or you can hire people for cheap that do a better job than you do already. You know, the best chiropractors are broke. Don't become a better chiropractor or a better doer of the thing you do. Become a better marketer, a better attractor of customers, a better keeper of customers. That's where the true intrinsic value and the hidden wealth is in your business.
My takeaway is same as Lane. I love this phrase. I created this phrase. If you do what everyone around you is doing, you're going to get the same results that they get, which is most often mediocre results, disappointing results. What you need to do is do something different. If you look up lame in the dictionary, the definition, one of the definitions is pathetically lacking in force or effectiveness. And I find that so many small business owners and entrepreneurs, independent sales professionals, they lack force and effectiveness in their promotion and their ability to attract customers in the way they run their business. And it's because they follow the traditional paths that have been set before them by, by competitors in the marketplace, by other people who are doing a similar thing, or just by listening to, friends, family, neighbors who ad reps and all these people who give them advice who are broke. And if you take advice from broke people, you can only expect to get one thing, nothing. And so the key here is to do something different. You have to take risks. You have to get out of your comfort zone, and you have to make things happen. So same as Lane.
All right. Well, Jimmy V, Travis Miller, thank you so much. The book is Gravitational Marketing. It is an excellent read. I highly recommend it to anyone in the field of marketing, small business owners, entrepreneurs, and the generally curious about how do you succeed in business. I want to thank you guys for reaching out and giving me the opportunity to talk to you today. I really enjoyed it, and hopefully this is the first in an ongoing set of conversations.
Absolutely, David. Thank you for having us on. I want to let everyone know, if you're interested in learning about attracting customers, please, by all means, go pick up the book Gravitational Marketing. It's at bookstores nationwide, or you can get it at Amazon.com. If you want to invest in the book, that's great. I think it's like $17 on Amazon. If you don't want to invest in the book, or you are going to invest and you want more resources, you can get our Customer Attraction Starter Pack, which is absolutely free information on how you can begin to utilize gravitational marketing and begin attracting customers to your business. And you can get that Customer Attraction Starter Pack absolutely free at startattractingcustomers.com. So startattractingcustomers.com, you can pick up a copy, or not a copy, you can pick up your copy of this Customer Attraction Starter Pack. It's an audio interview and some other resources all about attracting customers.
All right, wonderful. Well, thank you guys again so much.
Well, thank you, David, and have a great day.
You too.